Good morning. It's 35 minutes past the hour. This is the Faith Radio Network. So great to have you with us today. I'm Bill Meyer. My guest this half hour is Arlene Pellicane. She is a speaker and author from San Diego, California. Some of her books include 31 Days to a Happy Husband, 31 Days to Becoming a Happy Wife, and 31 Days to Become a Happy Mom. She has been a featured guest on the Today Show, TLC's Homemade Simple, the 700 Club, Turning Point with Dr. David Jeremiah, and Family Life Today. And actually, before she became an author and a stay-at-home mom, Arlene worked as an associate producer for Turning Point Television. She earned her BA from Biola University, her master's in journalism from Regent, and you can learn more about her at her website, which is Arlene Pellicane, P-E-L-L-I-C-A-N-E, just like it sounds, arlenepellicane.com. Today, she joins us to dive into her new book, co-authored with Dr. Gary Chapman, Growing Up Social, Raising Relational Kids in a Screen-Driven World. And Arlene, welcome to Faith Radio.
Great to be here. Thanks so much, Bill.
So before we dive into the new book, I got to ask you, tell us a little bit about the 31 days concept. How'd you come up with that? And can you really make positive changes in your life and your family in just 31 days?
Well, I figured if Dr. Kevin Lehman could do it in 5 days, you know, he's got to have a new kid by Friday, have, you know, which is also possible. I figured I'll give you a few extra days and you can have 31 days.
So I love it.
It's the whole idea that we need that hope for change. Sometimes we think, okay, I am stuck and I don't know where to go. I can't do this new behavior forever, but I could try a new behavior for 31 days and let's see how that goes. And truly, if you spend 31 days doing a small habit over time, you'll realize, well, that kind of made a difference in my life, and that success begets another success in your relationship. So it's very exciting what can happen in 31 days.
And I'm guessing that you've heard some stories from some moms, from some dads, from some families that have been impacted by your books. And what have they told you when you go out and speak?
It's really fun. You know, one compliment, of course, is what the one lady said, whenever my husband and I are having trouble, my husband will say, go get Arlene's book. Please go get the book. She'll get the book, you know, 31 Days to a Happy Husband. So I think that is very funny. But it's this whole idea that it's usable, which I'm thrilled about. And then my book, 31 Days to Becoming a Happy Mom, you know, so many of us as moms, we wake up like Mary Poppins. We want to do the right thing. We're all sunshine. But by dinner, we're like Cruella de Vil and we're like, get to bed, you know. And so it's this idea of how can we be happier for our children. And so one mom with four young children, they're probably all under six, she had reported, you know, I thought I was a happy mom, but I read your book and I just started to implement trying to smile at my children more at breakfast and mealtime, morning, when they wake up and then when they go to bed, just trying to, on purpose, smile at them. Good morning, honey. And she said, my kids all said, Mommy, there's a difference in you. You're so much happier. And she couldn't believe it because she thought she was doing all those things, you know, beforehand. And she realized, oh, I guess I haven't been smiling at my children as often as I thought I was.
Oh.
So those small changes do make a big difference.
Hey, something interesting, the research on smiling, you may have seen this. Fascinating. If we actually make the corners of our mouth go up, force them to go up, even when we're not happy, it actually has a physiological response and we start to feel happier. Our mood improves.
It is amazing.
So if you're having a tough day, or if you had to get up like at 5 a.m. in San Diego, like Carly did today, just take the corners.
Like our listeners have to do.
Yeah. Just take the little corners of your mouth and push them up there. So, okay. So
you'll feel better.
You tackled this topic of kids and technology in the book, Growing Up Social, that you wrote with Dr. Gary Chapman. And let me ask you this as we dive into this topic. Do you believe that technology is bringing families closer together, or is it actually driving us apart?
And this is a central question that you need to ask for your family. What is technology doing? I think technology has the potential, of course, and can be used to bring a family together. But by and large, today, it is driving families apart. because a family cannot, how can they be close and bond and talk and do activities together if the average American child is spending 7 hours or more on screens? You know, it's just impossible. If my kid is playing video games, watching television, listening to music with their earbuds in, how can I, as a parent, you know, be close to this child? And the same is true for adults. You know, how can children be close to us if they look at us and we're like answering an email, then we're answering a text, and then we're checking our stock quotes, and then we're, you know, doing this, and we're always on as well. So it goes all across the board that many times we will buy the device because we'll think, well, this will connect us. But then when you really look inside the home, everyone is alone under the same roof with their same device, with whatever personalized, you know, entertainment or media that they need. And so I think for the most part, when you look at the phone, you look at the tablet, the TV, we are not Skyping grandma. We're not learning multiplication tables. We're not memorizing Bible verses with these devices. By and large, they're used for entertainment, and they typically drive a family further apart.
You know, I think if we had a GoPro and we could take that camera and go into the average American home, let's say between, I don't know, 6 and 9 in the evening, we would find in many homes exactly what you're talking about. Every family member is involved with some type of media or technology, and they're doing it separately. They're under the same roof. Mm-hmm. They're part of the same family. But that is a big concern to me, Arlene, and I know it is for you as well.
It is a huge concern, particularly those who are listening. If you've got young children, you know, preschooler, toddler, early elementary, this is the time for these kids to be running outside, to be playing, to be imagining, to play with cars and play with you. And when they are just sitting there stock still, staring at their phones, you just think, like, what in the world? It's typically your phone, parent, but sometimes it's their phone. I've seen some elementary school kids with their own phone. And when so early, they are so attracted to that screen and they're so used to it, their brains are so used to being with that screen, then it creates a whole host of attention problems, empathy problems, all sorts of things growing up.
You know, my wife and I made a conscious decision when we bought our SUV a couple of years ago. We had the option to get the built-in DVD player. And, of course, we talked to so many families who said, oh, it's just such a lifesaver on these, you know, cross-country trips. And you got to have it or you'll, you know, and we decided not to do it. Now, I must say there are times when our kids drive us completely stark raving mad on those car trips. But by and large,
hour 10. And
But and there are times where we wish we had that DVD player to tranquilize our children. But I think about all the conversations we would have missed. All the things that our kids wouldn't have seen out the window, you know, as we drove across this beautiful country, and just the togetherness that's lost when, you know, you're watching some dumb, you know, animated movie with a bunch of bathroom humor in it. I mean, the fact is there are just so many parents now are using this technology as a babysitter to kind of keep their kids at bay. And that's a concern as well.
Yeah, and you know, there is truly a role, a valuable role for boredom in a child's life. Like while they're sitting in your car and they're staring outside and they're thinking, oh my goodness, I'm so bored. But there's room in their brain then for other thoughts to formulate, for them to be thinking. In today's culture, you know, it's like, oh, you kid can't be bored. They've got to constantly be entertained. And what that's doing is it's setting this up for this expectation that life is going to be amusing and entertaining. And most of us who work realize that life is not always amusing and entertaining. And the idea that your child does not have the self-control to sit in a restaurant for 5 minutes without playing a video game. You know, if you've got a four-year-old and you are raising a child, then fine, let them play video games and eat Cheetos and lollipops all day long. But if someday this four-year-old is going to turn into an adult, you have to wonder, wait a minute, we can't sit here for 5 minutes. And you can't read a book or play tic-tac-toe on a napkin or my goodness, talk to the server and say thank you, you know, and you realize we're going to have a future problem. So you really have to be thinking of screens and then play the movie, if you will, of how is this going to turn out for your child when they're 15, 20, 25, 30. And I think it will really help you realize, oh, you know, 7 hours of screen media is probably not going to help my child get ahead in life when they're in their 20s.
And when you say 7 hours, you're not kidding, because the average child, the average teenager in America is spending so many hours immersed in some type of media. And usually nowadays, it's mostly digital, that they're, you know, carrying a mobile technology they're carrying with them.
Right.
So it's a big concern. In your book that you wrote with Gary Chapman, which is Growing Up Social, you talk about what you call the A-plus relational skills that parents need to start at home. What are those relational skills, Arlene?
Yeah, these are emotional skills you want to grow up in your kids. And they're not the A, academic A's. They're the A's of affection. Can your child give and receive love? Appreciation. You have a grateful child that says thank you, or an entitled child that says, why don't I have one of those? And then anger management. Does your child know how to deal with their anger in a healthy way? Apology. Can your child apologize, not just text something sorry or defend someone if something happens? And attention. Can your child pay attention, have the self-control to listen even if they're bored? So those five A-plus skills, if your child possesses them, you know, they're going to do really well in life.
They're going to do well in a relationship leading towards marriage. They're going to do well as an employee or as a boss. They are all necessary for every one of us to succeed in life, and they're all certainly biblical. But we have so many kids spending so much time with screens. It sounds like you and Gary Chapman are concerned that is threatening the emotional development of children. Am I correct?
That is absolutely correct. Because, you know, when a child is used to a screen, they're used to something instant. They don't have to wait for it. You know, if they have to wait 2 seconds, it's like, Mom, what's wrong with this thing? Dad, why won't this work? Fix it, you know. So they're used to everything instant, and they're used to choice. They have lots of channels to choose from, lots of games to choose from, different levels to go for. And so it trains them to be very consumer-oriented, and now it's not only something, you know, in days gone by, you'd sit in front of a television. Now it's in your pocket, and I can consume whatever I want to. And what that tends to do is to produce a child that says, I want this, I deserve this, instead of, I'll wait for that, Mom. I'll wait for that, Dad, and thanks so much for allowing me to have this. You know, so it pushes against gratitude. And gratitude is so key to life. If you have a child who's appreciative, they can do and accomplish so much more. And, you know, obviously they show that grateful people, they're more resilient, they're less depressed, they have less physical problems. So if you're wondering, where can I start with this? You could start at the dinner table. Just by having a conversation at the dinner table without screens, you know, banish the screens from your dinner table, from your kids and from yourself.
Yeah, the research on family meals, the Columbia University has a great survey they do every year where they look at how family meals positively impact children, and all of the high risk behaviors that so many kids get involved in, teens get involved in, are really mitigated by family meals. Families that sit down together and have, let's say, five meals a week together, those kids are more likely to graduate from high school, go on to college, less likely to be depressed, less likely to get involved in drug and alcohol abuse, less likely to be involved in criminal behavior. And yet, Columbia did a follow-up study a couple of years ago when social media and mobile technology began to explode in this country. What they found is, if even one member of the family uses technology at the table, that protective factor we're talking about completely disappears. Isn't that sad?
It is amazing. It's amazing. So, you know, the hope of that is doing something so simple as saying, okay, everyone put your phones over here, or everyone silence, or everyone, you know, if you will be really proactive about that, turn off the TV in the background, and you'll protect that family mealtime, and that's your one thing that you do, then it's like, wow, your chances of connecting with your kids is so far greater and being an influence on them. So start there, and then you kind of can expand some screen-free boundaries, you know, whether that's, I would suggest not having a screen in a child's room, whether your child's a teenager or your child is two, you know, taking that screen out, collecting that screen. I know that's not going to be popular with either of those age groups if you've already done it, but thinking through this and, you know, those small steps of giving them screen-free zones in the home, maybe a screen-free day, like a Sunday, all those things help the brain to rejuvenate, help people to connect face-to-face, and help kids not to be dependent, like they're not addicted to their phone. In the same way you'd have a substance abuse addiction, you know, kids in other countries, they're being treated for all these addictions, internet use disorder, because they have to be gaming 38 hours a week and they've lost their other interests and they can't stop controlling their use. And, you know, you don't want your kids to get there.
Well, and unfortunately, some of those video games were designed by evil psychologists who are using behavioral methods to trick these kids into wanting higher and higher levels. We call it intermittent reinforcement. And it's just like the rat in the cage pressing the lever, and the kid needs to press it and press it and press it, because every once in a while he's going to win. And just like gambling, just like slot machines, I don't think a lot of parents realize the addictive nature of these games. Well, some of them do if they've got middle schoolers or high schoolers and they've given them free rein. What about this question, Arlene, because I'm sure you get it all the time. What age should a child be allowed to have a cell phone?
Yeah, we do get that all the time. And it is this question then of asking, what does your child need the cell phone for? And many times it's, so everyone else has one, then I would say the answer is no. Safety issues. Sometimes you have to wonder, is it safer for my child to walk home alone than to have the cell phone in their pocket that all of a sudden they've got this power of being able to connect to others, you know.
Pandora's box that they could open up, right?
Yeah, that could be worse than them having to walk home alone. So if it is a safety issue, maybe a phone that is a simple phone, not a smartphone, but a simple phone where they can just call a few numbers, you know, that might be do the trick for you. But I think the longer you can hold it off for your children, the better. I don't think a child in elementary school needs a cell phone. I see many kids who have cell phones. I will tell you personally, our son is going into middle school this year, and he will not have a cell phone in middle school. Every family is going to choose differently. For us, our feeling is just the negative influence that cell phone brings into his life is greater than the benefit of having one. You know, we'll tell him, and he's going to ride his bike 3 miles to school, and we'll tell him, you know, if something happens, you know, I'm sure there's a friend or someone who you can borrow their phone and you can ask them to use them in case of emergency. But you know what's funny? My husband, James, says, you know, I did all these things, of course, as a kid without a phone, and if you got a flat tire, you had to figure it out, and you had to get home somehow. And he was talking about how the cell phone, many times, it's not for the kid, it's for us parents, that we want to know that we can get in touch with our child, and we don't want to let go of that control of being able to text them and say, where are you? Are you going to be home in 5 minutes? And sometimes it is a parental issue of us having to say, you know what, our child is going to be okay, and if there's truly an emergency, I'm sure they'll be able to reach us.
Well, and of course, that comes back to trusting God, that God loves our kids even more than we do, which is hard to believe, but it's so true, and that we should be casting our anxiety upon Him, not texting our kid every 5 minutes. And the other thing, and I know you've, I'm sure, talked about this, Arlene, we have the media has unfortunately conditioned so many parents to believe that there is a lurker around every corner. And it's not true. Statistically, if you talk to the folks, the FBI, they will tell you that most child snatchings, most child abductions are committed by somebody the child knows. It's an ex, it's a boyfriend, it's a relative. There are stranger abductions, but very rarely in this country. And yet we have got parents so worried that they believe that every child needs to have, you know, a digital chip implanted under their skin so we know where they are at all times. And it's just like, it's unfortunate that we have bought into that as parents.
Yeah. So that you have to think, you know, am I making this decision to get this cell phone for my child out of fear? Or is there a different reason? You know, because it's much more likely that your child will stumble onto porn for a boy, social media for a girl, that she'll be all involved in what everyone says about her, you know, and be all heartbroken because of that. That's much more likely with that phone than them being abducted by a stranger. You know, and we give them the phone for that safety, that we want to make sure that they don't get taken. And yet what we give them in their pocket, I think, is far more dangerous because it's everywhere. And a boy is going to stumble onto porn. A girl is going to say, oh, this person didn't like me, I'm heartbroken, and, you know, all these things. I've heard so many parents say, you know, I took away my child's phone for 2 weeks. And at first, of course, they just screamed and said I was trying to ruin their life. But at the end of the 2 weeks, they said, you know, thank you. That was kind of nice not to have the pressure of always having to check in and be somebody and, you know, be on my social media. And they would thank the mom. So sometimes we've got to be the parent and say, this is not healthy for you. And we're going to dial this back.